The 2014 Martha's Vineyard International Film Festival begins today and runs until September 7th. It's a very popular event on the island, and some films already are selling out. Joining me to talk about the offerings this year are Martha's Vineyard Film Society Director Richard Paradise. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, Sean.
And, good morning. And Tim Miller, features editor of the Cape Cod Times and the Cape's resident film critic. Tim also is on the jury for the short films in this year's festival. Good morning, Tim.
Morning, Sean.
Welcome both to The Point. Of course, I'm Sean Corcoran, and I'm filling in for Mindy Todd today, who would love to be part of this discussion. The discussion already began before, of course, the microphones went on, because we've got two film buffs here who just can't contain themselves. Richard, tell me a little bit tell me a little bit about the history of this film festival.
Well, the Martha's Vineyard International Film Festival is now in its ninth year, started in 2006, and was part of always the Martha's Vineyard Film Society, which is our umbrella group, our nonprofit group. And the film festival has been a great enjoyment for the vineyard and the community and its visitors. It's sort of, I look upon it, maybe that's my own personal bias, look upon it as sort of the ending swan song of summer, the summer season. Of course, we just celebrated our Labor Day weekend, and now it's time to celebrate world cinema with the International Film Festival.
Give us a little idea of the scope. How many films are we talking about? How many locations? That type of thing.
Right. Well, surprisingly, this year, for the first time in the past, we're actually only going to be screening at one location, one venue. And this is a big departure from the previous 8 years. And it was a hard decision to make, but there's a bunch of contributing forces, one being that the Martha's Vineyard Film Center, which we opened 2 years ago at the beginning of the 2012 Film Festival, has become such a treasured, facility venue on the vineyard. It's the perfect place to watch film. Any time of the day. It's beautifully seated, with comfortable seats. It's got digital, high technology, digital projection and sound. And it just seems to be the right thing to do at this point in time. We've used other venues in Vineyard Haven over the last several years. As an organization, we've always sort of jumped around and used a lot of different places. But I think for the experience of watching cinema, there's no better place than the Film Center. And I've had people tell me this over the last year, year and a half, that they've asked, well, why do you keep using these other venues when you should just be using the Film Center? Mm-hmm. And we decided to do that. So with that, our program has shrunk a little bit. We now have 16 program slots. This year, we've expanded the festival to include Tuesday night, Wednesday night, and sort of as a soft opening, and then having our traditional gala event on Thursday night, still doing it on Thursday night. So 16 programs altogether. Mm.
And Tim, you're on the short films jury this year. What's the criteria for a short film, and what are you looking for as a member of that jury?
Well, actually, I don't know what the cutoff is as far as what qualifies. I was wondering that.
Yeah. Traditionally, for the International Short Jury Competition, it's the only part of the festival that's sort of open, and there's an open solicitation. This year, we had more film entries, over 450 entries of any time in our past. And we have had a committee of five that viewed the films, watched every single short film, and this is over a 7-month period. And from those viewings and that committee, they each rated on a 1 to 5 scale those films. Now, criteria-wise, it's very broad. We didn't limit it to any type of film. It could be a documentary, could be animation, could be, a narrative feature. It could be from any part of the world.
How about running time, though? That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, running time, it's usually about 20 minutes. It's not longer than 20 minutes. And and so some of the films are 3 minutes, 5 minutes. Mm-hmm.
And Tim, when do you get at these films? Have you already started?
Or? I saw them yesterday. I got them a couple days ago.
Right. Right.
So I actually went to work so I didn't have to share the TV with my wife.
Oh, okay.
or try to steal the TV from
And how do you approach the judging? What are your expectations?
Well, it's funny. I know that over the years, sometimes it's been suggested by some of the judges that we break it into categories and give points and that type of thing. But I don't think that would work. For example, you know, if you were going to give points for dialogue, well, let's say that a movie is silent and it's spectacular. It's not, you know, so I've never been crazy about that idea, so I've always tried to discourage it. Usually what we do is the judges watch all the movies and they rank their top five. Mm-hmm. And then we look at them. Everybody sort of all at once sends their top five via email to each other, and we look at you know, how we've rated them and see if sort of a consensus has emerged. And it's amazing that every single year it's been very easy to be a judge on this, because every year there's been something like, I mean, maybe it's not been, the movie has been number one on everybody's list, but maybe it's been in the top three on everybody's list.
I see.
So it's really worked out well. I mean, who knows? This is a very, very strong group of movies. So I wouldn't be shocked if everybody had sort of a different, you know, if we have a little more trouble this year picking out a favorite. I mean, certainly some have emerged as my favorites, which I shouldn't say yet what they are. But
don't right. say anything yet.
No, I won't. I won't. But you know, I could certainly understand why it's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. They have the five that I don't have listed. They have those five. You know.
Richard, looking at the list of different films, are there any overriding programming themes that kind of emerge or jump out at you?
Well, every year, Sean, I try to consider the programming theme of other places and other cultures, and trying to take our audiences, our festival audiences, to other places in the world, to give them a view, you know, either whether it's through a drama or a documentary or even a comedy, about how other people live in other parts of the world, and sort of how they deal with common universal, you know, issues and themes and challenges. This year, more than anything, I think it's the festival of road trips. Many of the films sort of figuratively deal with someone going on the road, whether they're going sort of to discover their past, whether it's their history of their family, or whether they're just going on a musical tour, as the case of the U.S. premiere of Austin to Boston, which is about a bunch of musicians going on tour in vintage VW buses, campers, and discovering, you know, what it was like to travel the country, travel the U.S. figuratively from Austin to Boston, you know, playing music together. And so it's all about, you know, sort of taking either a personal journey or taking a journey for pleasure, leisure, but in the course of that, learning something about themselves, learning something about where they are in their life. I mean, our closing night film, A Five-Star Life, how perfect of a title is that? It's pertaining to a woman, a young woman, who is pretty much given up her personal life for her career. And what a career. She's a five-star hotel reviewer. She travels from one beautiful five-star hotel to another around the world.
Wow.
But in doing and living this five-star life, she's given something up. She's lost and has not fully developed her full life. And so she comes to learn that in her travels.
Tim, you know, in urban areas, you can find, you know, cinemas, screening forum films, art houses, and things like that. Here on the Cape and Islands, it's not quite as simple. So aside from the festivals, what are the best options for people seeing foreign films these days in our area?
Well, you know, there are a few places that, you know, we've got the Cape Cinema in Dennis, and we've got Water's Edge Cinema in Provincetown, and the Chatham Orpheum Theater plays some sort of more mainstream movies, but also some of the more art house films too. So we're very lucky in that, you know, not having a major city right here, you know, most, you know, usually to be able to find art houses, you have to be in a Boston or mm-hmm. or yes. sunny Detroit or
your hometown, right?
Gotta always throw that in. But you know, so we are lucky that, but, you know, while we have those, the film festivals, we're really blessed to have these film festivals between the Martha's Vineyard and Woods Hole is a wonderful film festival and Provincetown,
sure.
Nantucket. They all have different personalities. One of the things that Richard's done with his festival and what really all the directors of the film festivals have to do and have done is the same thing that, say, someone like Eric Hart, who runs the Cape Cinema, does, and that's build an audience where with art films, you have to be able to be relied. If you're going to present them, you have to sort of be able to stick with it, not mix in the mainstream for fear of, oh, gee, what if I don't get an audience? Like throw in some mainstream too to get more attendance. But to really always find challenging movies that are going to draw a certain audience. And that audience will start coming to you not even knowing that much about a movie. They're gonna go, like, people are going to go to this festival not saying, oh, geez, I want to see Child's Pose. They're going to go, well, Richard has great taste. He shows these amazing movies at this film festival. I'm going to go to the film festival. I'm going to take a chance on just about anything that sounds appealing to me. And even if I don't love it, although, you know, there's going to be a good chance I am going to love it. But even if I don't, it's going to be challenging. It's going to be different. It's going to be worthwhile. And that's the thing about these, about this festival is, you know, when I got my, the short films, I knew they were going to be interesting. And sure enough, it was like 10, I'll pitch the short films,
no, go ahead.
The
yes,
short
please.
Films. It's like 10 little movies. It's like in 2 hours, a little over 2 hours, you're going to get 10 movies. And if you don't like one of them, although you're going to like most of them, I think, just wait 3 minutes because there's going to be another one that's going to maybe blow you away with its themes.
So how does this work? So they'll play those 10 shorts all at once. Will that be after
right.
or before Tim and his colleagues on that particular jury say what they think?
Well,
because I want to know, can they critique Tim?
Yeah. Well, as in years past, those 10 finalists, which have been culled from the over 450 films, and I should add that Tim didn't have to see all 450 films. The committee, the viewing committee, narrowed it down. And those 10 finalists will all be sort of showcased together on Friday evening. So the judges will not announce what they feel is the best film of those 10 until after the program is seen by the audience on Friday.
Okay.
And in years past, Tim has come and actually announced it. Other judges have come. But because all the judges are, you know, in different places and different times, you know, they all can't be there physically on that night. But they all get to see the films and converse with each other beforehand, before Friday comes along.
Okay. We're talking about the... Yes, Tim, one more.
Go ahead. It's more fun that way, I think, for the audience, too, where they can, you know, rather than finding out what we like the best, you know, for them to see, okay... Boy, they'll have a rooting interest in the announcement.
Yes,
you know, and then they can go, oh,
that Miller,
he got it wrong again.
You heard what he said about Avengers 2, didn't you? We should have seen this coming. We're talking about the Martha's Vineyard International Film Festival with Vineyard Film Society director Richard Paradise and Tim Miller, the features editor in the at the Cape Cod Times and a film critic there as well. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the specific films that will be in the festival. This is The Point on WCAI. I'm Sean Corcoran, and we're talking about the Martha's Vineyard International Film Festival with Vineyard Film Society director Richard Paradise and Tim Miller of the Cape Cod Times. He's the feature editor there as well as a film critic. Let's talk about the animation showcase, which is part of the festival, and this includes Bill Plimpton. Someone, fill me in. Who's Bill Plimpton?
Well, Bill is probably the best known independent animator out there in the United States, if not the world. I mean, Bill has been making animation for over 40 years. He's never worked for a large studio, even though he's had many offers from the Disney company and things like that. He's been twice nominated for an Oscar for an animated short. He's done a lot of commercial work, amazing commercial work. He's just a prolific, animator, drawer. It's all hand-drawn with him. All his animations, all hand-drawn. He's been doing it since he was a child, and he's now in his mid-60s. And he lives in New York City, and he's just so well-respected in the world of animation. And for the last 7 out of 8 years, he's come to the Martha's Vineyard International Film Festival, and he's curated a showcase of new animation. And it's the only program in the festival that I don't have my hand involved in. I mean, I let him curate the films. I don't see the films beforehand. He brings the animation and animators to the festival, and it's just a joy to watch what pops up on the screen. It's the only thing I haven't seen.
And Tim, I understand that this is one of your favorite parts of the festival, the animation.
I'll tell you, Bill, I got to meet him, and one of his shorts was in the short contest 1 year,
yeah,
and it
one
was
year.
The title was something like "The Cow Who Wanted to Be a Hamburger," and it was so funny. It was so funny. It was so clever, and I really enjoyed. I mean, that's one of the nice things about film festivals too. Is you get to meet somebody like that, and they're very accessible, and so it'd be an opportunity for people to meet Bill Plimpton. And after you see his work, you'll want to, because it's very clever, his work. And so I could see where Richard would let him pick out. He's the perfect person to sort of present a series of animated films, and I'm sure they'll be very clever. Like his
one. Oh yeah, he has a new one this year also in the showcase called Footprints.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, really so funny.
Well, I want Richard to talk about some of the films, highlight some of his favorites or particular ones. But first, Tim, why don't you tell us a little bit? You're most familiar with the short films.
Yes.
Those are the ones you've watched.
Yep.
I know you can't tell us your favorites because you're a juror.
Yeah.
But walk us through some of the highlights,
sure,
perhaps.
Sure. Well, you just get such a variety of films. There's one called Door God from China. That's about a young girl and her father, and the mother is gone, has left the family, and it's about her maybe coming back and sort of what happens there. But it's in such a short amount of time. To me, I look at short films as almost like the cinematic version of poetry. As opposed to a short story, as opposed to a novel, which maybe your epic film would be, where it's all killer, no filler. You know, it's like in a very short amount of time, you get all the stuff picked. And I mean, every single one of these movies, I was writing down in my notes were themes. Like pretty heavy duty themes in a lot of these things, like. Door God, one of the themes, and it's kind of an unusual one, is just the things that are left unsaid and sort of secrets, but not in the typical way that secrets are presented in fiction, but in a more subtle way. And it's a really, really cool movie in that way. let's see, there's one called So You've Grown Attached, and it's about a girl and her imaginary friend. And it's just like the imaginary friend has sort of grown attached to the girl.
Oh.
And he, and I mean, I don't want to give away too much, but it's this really imaginative, off the wall in a really good way type of movie. Had me, I was laughing out. I mean, somebody would have thought I was insane, which often is the case, but where I'm like just sitting at work watching this on the computer and just busting a gut at some of the stuff. It's so, I found it so
funny. I was going to ask you if some of them are more lighthearted than others and what some of the more.
Some are. That's the thing, too. You really get a combination. I mean, some, a lot of them are kind of heartbreaking, but some are very. You know, some are lighthearted, some are very sort of political. There's maybe two or three or four that involve like a missing parent, and that's like a key part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
There are certainly movies with feminist themes, but not like sort of the heavy, you know, not like a heavy-handed kind of beat you over the head with the theme kind of. I mean, it's just it's there and it's powerful, but in imaginative ways. There's a really good one that's set in Venice, and if you like Venice, just watching Venice on the screen for however many minutes, it's just so beautiful. But it's about a girl who wants to be a gondolier. And how that's traditionally a male thing, and so it gets into that and really, really well done.
Richard, some of the highlights from the full length films this year.
Right. Well, there's so many, but just to give you a few, Sean, ones that I'm particularly interested in seeing with the audience, Kumiko, the Treasure Hunter, which is actually a U.S. production, but part of most of the movie takes place in Tokyo, takes place in Japan. And then through a personal journey by Kumiko, this young, sort of shy, lonely office worker living in Tokyo, she transports herself to Minnesota, of all places, and then on to Fargo. And if you remember Fargo, the Coen brothers movie, she is convinced that the money that the Steve Buscemi character buries at the end of that movie is actually really buried somewhere. So she's gone looking as a treasure hunter for this money. So it's a really interesting film. It does touch upon sort of a little bit mental illness and how we all sort of are looking and searching for something in life. And so that's a beautifully told story, wonderfully told. It was at the Sundance Film Festival this past year. Another film, May and Summer, again, starts out in America, but ends up in Jordan, of all places, and in the Middle East. And it follows this young woman who's planning to get married, and she goes back to her native home of Jordan and to be married there to her fiance. But through that journey back home and reconnecting with her family there, things change and unexpected surprises happen, you know, as she approaches her forthcoming marriage. Land Ho, excited about this film. It takes place in Iceland. Two Americans, two elderly Americans, probably in their late 60s, who are looking for adventure. One has just lost his spouse. The other one decides that his friend needs some cheering up. And so he buys, spur of the moment, spontaneously, he buys two tickets to Iceland and tells his friend he's going on this trip. I've been to Iceland. This is an amazing picture just in the fact that you get to see the natural beauty of Iceland, which is so surreal. It is so different from what we're used to. But it's a buddy picture. It's a road picture. It's a comedy. And so, but it's with these two elderly, you know, elder gentlemen who want to get their groove back. So like many of the films take you on a journey, a personal journey, a journey that might be familiar or not, might not be, but Those are some of the films.
Speaking of familiar, some folks might think, oh, this is a foreign film. I'm not going to be familiar with some of these actors. But there are films, and I'm thinking of Hunting Elephants.
Exactly. Sir Patrick Stewart.
Yes.
You know, Star Trek fame. Does a marvelous job playing this sort of theatrical ham, you know, this actor who's been asked to come in on a bank robbery with two other elderly friends and this young boy. And it's a comedy, though it does have some dramatic moments in it, but it mostly plays as a comedy. And it comes from Israel. It takes place in Israel. And it's a different type of movie. You know, most Israeli films you think of are dealing with hard subjects, you know, the Middle East, you know, and suicide bombers and things like that. No, this narrative film is more plays like a crime thriller comedy kind of thing. And it's totally enjoyable and entertaining. And Patrick Stewart's great in the movie.
Of course. Yeah. You bring up an interesting question. I want to put it to Tim here. Do you find with foreign films that particular countries carve out kind of a niche known for producing particular kind of films? Certainly here in the U.S., we might be known for the action films.
Yeah.
Do you find, I mentioned Israel. What about some European countries, or is it just...
Well, I'll be honest. I don't look at film that way. I just take them as they come. And so I don't, you know, if it's a movie from Italy, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it were a heavy drama or a light comedy. And it's really that way with any. I imagine because, you know, certain areas, say like the Middle East, where, you know, obviously we, you know, given what's going on there, mm-hmm. there will be a heavier subject matter perhaps than from other parts of the world where maybe there aren't conflicts like that going on, but for the most part I just take them as they come and you know, mm-hmm. I don't make assumptions.
Richard Paradise, what about documentaries? Typically, the festival has several documentaries.
Right.
What about this year?
Well, this year we don't. from year to year, I mean, it all depends on sort of a coming together of a lot of different forces that dictate what we're going to present at the film festival. And for whatever reason, this year, we only have one documentary, not including like one or two shorts that would be considered documentary in nature. But for the most part, no documentaries. The only one is the Austin the Boston film that is about the musicians on the road. Again, I think the films that presented themselves, the availability of the films of how they sort of stacked up. Again, no one country is represented by multiple films. I try to, you know, very much spread that out and have a very large diversity of countries.
Are there some countries you just can't get films from?
Well, yes. I mean, I would say not necessarily countries per se, but even more in a larger scope, macro scope, like Africa, African mm-hmm. films, that originate from African countries. They're not very easily accessible here in the United States. They don't find distributors, people that are going to help them along and nurture them along. I mean, in years past, we've had some films from African countries, Nigeria, South Africa, of course, has some, you know, a fairly decent film industry. But the film industries there in the continent of Africa are not very well developed. Right. And I would say that in years past, I've made a concerted effort to get more films from South America, from the Caribbean. This year, we don't have any films that are from the Caribbean, countries of the Caribbean. So every year, from year to year. But, of course, the mainstays are always European films, because they have such well-developed, robust film industries, especially now Eastern European countries. Mm. Very strong film culture, film industry.
Tim, any final thoughts on the festival?
Well, one of the just what Richard was talking about, and as far as there only being one documentary, I think that's a virtue of the festival, the fact that it isn't locked into, okay, we have to have X number of this type of movie, X number of that, that each year is different based on you know, the best films available, and at least in Richard's view and his advisors. And I think that's a really good thing. It you know, it's not predictable. I think people, if they can, they should go to the island and see the movies.
Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, the Martha's Vineyard International Film Festival runs until September 7th. Richard, first few films already sold out, right?
Yes. Well, that's a good thing, right?
Of course.
Maybe a little frustrating to audiences. But the good thing also is a lot of those films I'm going to bring back in the autumn, and that's traditionally what I've done. I've taken the more popular films from the film festival, sort of given them sort of life in presenting them, and then bring them back. So films like Ida, Land Home, The Trip to Italy, they are sold out, but I will be bringing those back.
And many are not sold out,
right,
so people should definitely inquire and take a look at the website.
Go on the website. MVFilmSociety.com. You can buy your tickets in advance. If you're coming from the Cape, if you're coming from Falmouth, we have movies starting at 10 a.m., as early as 10 a.m. on Saturday and Sunday. You can come over, you can watch two or three movies, and still get back home on the Cape that evening.
There you go.
And so.
Okay, the Martha's Vineyard International Film Festival is until September 7th. I want to thank my guest, Richard Paradise. He's the director of the Martha's Vineyard Film Society. And Tim Miller, he's the features editor at the Cape Cod Times and a film critic here on Cape Cod. Gentlemen, thank you both.
You're welcome, Sean.
And we're going to take
habits.
Oh, I enjoy it every year. And we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Deborah Foreman, an art historian, is going to join us.